All right, so this is No Such Convention, Q&A with four writerly types. I think that's what it's booked as, right?
I'm pretty sure that's what it's booked as.
The schedule wasn't printed out. I'm sure that's what it said. All right, so first we should introduce ourselves. I'm Tom Quackenbush. I write fantasy novels in the Nightstream series, which you should all buy. I have other things, too.
I'm Erica Kudish. I write porn. Not just porn. Mostly I write really dark urban fantasy-ish things, a whole lot of meta-references. This is my first published book. I've done a couple of short stories as well under Kay Chazan, which is yet another stupid Jewish joke that I will be making this panel. There are going to be a million of them.
I'm Adam Telford. I write science fiction things. I don't have my books with me. I have an art book because I also do an animated web series based off my novels. That's what I do. I write mecha stuff.
Sweet.
And I'm Pete Tarkovich. I have no props with me, but that doesn't matter with the podcast, I guess. I am a webcomic author. I've been doing the webcomic Bardsworth for 10 years, just past my anniversary this past year. And
congratulations.
I'm also a fantasy author. Thank you very much.
Nice.
Great. So do we have any questions before I start interrogating them? I'm Tom Quackenbush.
Oh,
I have business cards if you want them.
Okay.
So, I guess I'm the moderator. You come up with questions, audience. All right.
Yes, they're gonna be we can also do readings if we need to kill time. Because we've got this room for an hour and a half.
We do. All right.
Oh, we'll
so,
kill time.
I'll start with you. We'll go around.
Sweet.
What inspired you to write porn, I guess?
A great deal of sexual tension. And, you know, being a virgin until I was 23. No, in all seriousness, the story started with fan fiction, actually. I've been writing fanfic since I was about 15 years old. I hung that on Rec Art Books Tolkien back on Usenet. That's how old I am.
So you wrote Hobbit porn?
No, I did not write Hobbit porn. Back then, I was not writing any erotica at all. I was writing a couple of song parodies. I swear I did a parody of the filming of The Lord of the Rings set to Evita. Like I was that kind of theater geek 15-year-old, and eventually I found my way into anime fandom, starting with Gundam Wing.
Good
Blast
choice.
From the past. Yeah, very good choice. And I was so confused as to why my thoughtful explorations of the mecha world were not jiving with the fandom, and it turns out the fandom was much more for thoughtful explorations of duos ass by heroes dick. So I was confused. And I started reading it, and I made a lot of friends in this area. And when I jumped ship to gaming land, I couldn't reconcile it either, because I was writing Final Fantasy stuff then, which is a fandom at that time which was split straight down the middle. There's the camp of people who are writing stuff that is not porn, and there's the camp of people who are writing porn. And there was a lot of tension in that area. I started writing stuff with erotic content probably when I was 21. You'll note the disparity between the age at which I started having erotic content in my life and writing erotic content. And this particular story, which is, yes, it's got erotic content in it, but it's also dark as balls. I like exploring what sex and what wanting can communicate to us about the human condition. And I know that sounds pretentious as hell, but it's something I really enjoy doing, like seeing what people's kinks say about them and their society. What people's relationships and inclinations say about their interactions with the world in a non-sexual way. And you can bridge the gap without writing romance to just using sex as a means of communication.
Okay.
So.
Adam, why do you create what you create?
Well, I wasn't good at writing porn, so I had to do something else. No, it was,
those who can't do.
That's exactly what it is. It actually started out as fan fiction at one point. It was like, I got into, video games, and like, there was a mecha game called Armored Core back in the day.
Oh my god!
Yes, people know what this is! Thank god! And it was fantastic! It was like, I wasn't really into mecha before that game. I was like, it was one of those random buy, like at Best Buy, when you actually had to go into a store and buy something. And I was like, oh, this is cool. You can make things and combine them and make paint jobs and whatnot.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another, and I ended up like, having like 35 different files of like different creations. It was insane. And I was like, you know what if I write like a fanfic story about this? And then it started happening, and then I noticed eventually it was like, this is becoming way more original. It has like nothing to do with this game anymore, so let me just redo it original wise. And then It was it's like I had a lot of things going on in my life, and it kind of became my outlet of like dealing with certain bad things going on in my life. And so it was always one of those things where it was kind of there's dark themes in it that go on, and I enjoyed writing it to a way. I was like, all right, well, these are crappy things that are happening. Let's make a fake world where this can go to something else and turn to a better positive and whatnot. And so yeah, then it just started. It became. It was like I did like 6 books as fan fiction, and then I went back and redid them as like
filed
6.
The serial numbers off.
Oh no, I didn't like publish them. I just had them. It was like, okay, here's like 80,000 words of the first one. Then they went up. I think one was like 375,000 words. I'm ridiculous. Then I went back and like I was like, all right, this is cool. I like where this is going, but it kind of sucks. So let's redo this. Ended up rewriting them, made them all original. Then I went back. I was like, these suck. Let's redo this again. So it was just one of those processes. But yeah, so it was like I enjoyed the mecha thing. I enjoyed, and then eventually I found Gundam, and then that was like, I need to do this visually now somehow.
Yeah.
And then it's like I'm trying to get back in the writing. It's like I started doing, you know, animation for a while, and like my writing kind of fell off. Like I still had the books. Like I published the first 2 books, and then I started working on the web series because it's very hard to publish a mecha book in the publishing. Like I actually had. I spoke to agents and whatnot. A lot of them like, oh, we like the pitch. We like to sell. I can't sell this at all, but I like it. There's like no audience. I was like, that vindicates me a bit. Kind of sucks, but that's good to know that it's not my writing. It's just there's no place for this. So then I ended up going to animation and then writing, and now I just do everything. But it's just, but I guess what it boils down to, it's like I like writing, and it's just a good. It got me through a lot of bad times in my life, and it's just become a natural thing for me. It's just, it's fun. It's what it boils down to, I think.
Pete, you're up.
I don't get a question.
Yo, what the fuck did you create? Why? Well, why do you do that?
Unlike the previous two, I didn't grow up reading or even reading or writing fanfic. I didn't even know it existed for the longest time. Mm-hmm. I was rather sheltered. I went to Catholic school. But I read a lot of fantasy novels when I was younger. Fantasy novels I probably shouldn't have been reading if anyone's ever read Piers Anthony's stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When I was younger, you know, over the head. Yeah. But that Dragonlance novels I was so into. And oddly enough, never got into... To this day, I've never read Lord of the Rings. You know, the basis of all fantasy stuff.
I haven't either.
I've read The Hobbit, if that counts, but...
It's more than I have.
Just somewhat.
Yeah.
So I was writing from, like, seriously, from probably about 7th or 8th grade on, you know, just in a notebook, stories, and making worlds up and everything. And then in college, I got obsessed with webcomics. I discovered webcomics, and they were still kind of in their infancy at that point, so there was only, like, a handful... But then they kept popping up, and I could sit here and list off all the ones that I used to read, and most of them don't even exist anymore. But
was one of them Goats?
I was aware of that one, but I never read it. 8-Bit Theater, Bob and George.
Oh my god, 8-Bit Theater!
Bob and George!
Brian Clevinger shook my hand once.
I have a funny story about Brian Clevinger. Remind me about it later, and I'll tell it. But yeah, all that older stuff... And I decided, you know, I love drawing and I love writing, so I figured that's perfect. You know, I never really thought about getting into comics because I liked comics when I was younger, and then I kind of went through a phase where I wasn't reading them. I'm kind of back into it now. Mm-hmm. So my friend, 2 friends of mine and I decided, let's do a webcomic together. I'll do the writing, you do the drawing. We had a third guy that was just there to bounce jokes off of. Mm-hmm. And we kind of based it on ourselves, and we were living in Buffalo at the time. And... creative differences. After a while, I was just like, I love you guys. I can't work with you. So I split off, and I kind of had this idea that I wanted to play with, so I created my webcomic, Birdsworth. And 10 years later, for some god-awful reason, I'm still doing it. I love it. But in the meantime, I've also published several books as well, because I never lost that love of writing. Mm-hmm. And I'm still in the middle of trying to write more, and it's just so hard to juggle family and the webcomic and writing. But so they come out very slowly, but I'll never lose that love for it.
So, Tom, why do you create what you create?
Okay. I've written little notes here so I can tell you. So my first book that got published was Wee Shadows. And actually it came from, I'm going to bring the room down, you ready for this? So my friend killed himself, and I wrote a story about it that I submitted to the Poughkeepsie Journal, and they immediately rejected it because they wanted stories about, I guess, cowboys riding off into the distance. And, you know, a story about a girl recovering from suicide, or the suicide of her boyfriend, didn't really play. So I have these two characters who I really like, even though I killed one of them. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do with this? I like this character. My girlfriend at the time named the female character Shane. And I'm like, that sounds like a girl name. Sure, apparently it's not. It's a guy's name. Didn't know. So I fall into that fantasy trope that the fantasy character girl has a boy's name. So in honor of my dead friend Todd, I started reading The Sandman series because I was really into it. And I'm like, Neil Gaiman does exactly what I want to be doing. I didn't write fan fiction, but I'm like, that sort of contemporary fantasy inspires me. So I'm like, well, you know what? The best way to recover from your friend's suicide? Magic. So she gets pulled into this whole magical chaos and has to find her way out. And then I kept writing them because the first one got published. That helps a lot once you're actually getting externally validated.
Mm-hmm. No, it really does.
Yeah.
It's actually funny that you mentioned that, because the thing that I was dealing with that went dark times was a suicide that got me starting to write this.
Suicide.
That makes three of us, actually.
I don't know if we should be like high-fiving that.
No, we shouldn't be. Actually, but, yeah. This book in particular, one of the things that I had to deal with in order to create it was my younger brother drunk driving. I'm not sure if it counts as suicide or not because he was alone in the car.
Yes.
And
it's yeah, really,
yes, really poor yeah. life choices, let's just say. And on my 24th birthday, he ran himself off the road on the way home. And it like threw my entire life into chaos. I had graduated from Vassar 2 years before that, and I had just gotten my master's degree at Pittsburgh. And I came home because, oh crap. And after that, I just didn't feel like academia anymore, but I was 2 years stalled out. And this is 2008 for all y'all youngins in here. That was when the stock market crashed. So I can't get into academia because I already pulled out. I can't start my singing career. My family is in chaos because my baby brother is dead. And what am I going to do? And this book kind of grew out of the recovery effort, not from the thing itself. Like, it was very much about a lost person having to build something out of the ashes of his life and maybe come up with a semblance of being, and also porn.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's amazing how that kind of dark stuff can really yeah. subsume your writing process. And you like come out the other side.
I think if you're like, if you have like an inkling of creativity within you, even if you're not aware of it, I think dark tragedy or whatever you want to call it, or bad things that happen, just kind of kickstarts it.
Yeah.
It was weird because it's like, I didn't have, you know, I'm very, very Christian upbringing and whatnot. And so it's like when there's a suicide, especially with someone that you're close with and whatnot, that kind of, especially it's like for me, I was trying to like help them. I knew something was wrong.
Oh God.
That didn't work. I was like, okay, we'll talk. This didn't happen. I was like, I'll talk tomorrow. That night it happened. Did not work. I was like, oh
my God.
It's like, okay, that was a thing that happened.
My friend threw himself a going away party and then he hung himself. So I understand.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And I missed the party because I was dating a new girl. I'm like, I'm gonna meet her parents. I'll see you soon.
It's, we were like talking, and like she didn't really want to like, because we were really close, and then something happened. She changed, she went to college, she came back, she was a little different. I noticed things, and I was gonna go talk with her, and she ended up leaving work early. I was like, no, you never leave work early. I'm always done before you. This is not how this was supposed to go. I was like, you know what, screw it, talk to you tomorrow morning, not a big deal. Get the call the next day. But it's like, yeah, so long story short, she threw herself in front of a train, we're done. I was like, oh, okay then. That's okay. So that kind of kick-started writing and, like, taking... There is a point to this!
So writing.
Writing is therapy, and not only that, it's because of the what if. It's like the where, why wasn't I there? Because
it's like, you try and take the confusion and, like, not knowing how to deal with something, and you end up throwing it to your protagonist. Like, that's
May
basically what the...
May this happen to none of you.
Yes.
May this happen to none of you.
It's like, that's what I did. It's like... It's like you take the thing and you're like, all right, this character doesn't know what's going on. You don't necessarily give the same exact scenario, but you give something where he's like, all right, well, they're thrown into a tragedy, and it's your way of working through it by giant robots killing each other. That's a thing.
It works. Magic, giant robots.
Magic, giant robots. Porn.
So creativity, yay!
Yes,
creativity. When they say writers are thieves, they don't mean that we steal from everywhere else. It means we steal from ourselves.
Yeah. So I've had a published blog since like 2001, just writing about myself, which helps you write a lot, but also makes people really not want to be around you or be like, "Don't write this down." It's like, of course, I'm not writing any of this down. But anyway, and so now I've been publishing anthologies, and I'm like, oh well, you know, I need motivation for my characters. I went through something like that. Let's just scroll back. This is some good text. Let me just lift this here, put it over here, and rephrase it. Perfect. So you get a lot of writing going. You've already written it.
Say that you're plagiarizing from yourself.
Right. Yeah. You can't plagiarize from yourself. It's fine.
You can recontextualize.
Right. Yes.
Who are you going to sue?
Exactly.
The highest court, I guess. I don't know.
So do any of you have questions now that we've brought the room down?
I didn't.
All right.
Then. Oh, God.
Then. That was
That was terrible. That was really terrible. All
right. So, what has been your weirdest fan reaction?
Okay. So I'm just no. We have time for this one because I'm going to confine it to actual published work and not to weirdest reaction to my ancient fanfic. We'll save that for the other panel. Weirdest reaction to this so far. The Backup, which is the novel that I am here promoting and also my first one, got a starred review in Publishers Weekly. I was on cloud 9. It was wonderful. The first ratings on Goodreads start to pour in, and they're all 4s and 5s. And then I get this dude Julio. And this dude Julio says, "This book is fucked up." And he shows a gif. Like, you'll have to go on the Goodreads profile of this. It's hilarious. This gif of, you know, the transformation scene in the animated Cinderella where the fairy godmother waves her wand and suddenly the dress spools out? And suddenly the dress spools out and Cinderella's head falls off and she spins off headless into the distance. And the mice are horrified. And then he goes on to describe the various problems that he had with the book, but also that he's very glad he read it, and he ends the thing with, "Just don't go into it expecting a happy ending. Don't be like Julio. Julio's kind of dumb." And then he gave me 3 stars, and I thought, that is the best 3-star review I will ever, ever get. And I contacted him on Twitter, and I told him exactly that, and now we're doing a panel at the Stonewall Inn together in April. So that is the weirdest fan reaction I've had so far on my published work, Cinderella Without a Head.
Adam?
So, when I published the first book, I didn't push it because it was one of those things. Well, I just want to point out that if you're going to self-publish or write, don't rush it. Don't be like, "I wrote a book. All right, you're on Amazon now." Don't do that. I was going through a time, and it was difficult parents, and they're like, "Oh, why did you do this? You should do this. You should." Very, very forceful on things. And I was like, "I gotta re-edit this. This is not ready for public." "Oh, you should just do it." I was like, "All right, fine, I'll show you. And we'll just publish it." So I never like fully did marketing or pushing for the book intentionally because I was like, "I'm not ready to do this. I'm not gonna throw it that way, but I'm gonna do this." Shut my dad up and be like, "We're done. Leave me alone." So some people, they still like the people that did read the book, because it's like I was doing a lot of animation around this time, and they liked the book, and even though there were certain things, me personally, I was like, "It's kind of not great, but okay." So what ended up happening is a lot of people get very... I have a lot of characters. I like to write a lot of characters, and each character I like to give their own depth and story and whatnot. I got...
You are totally a Universal Century right now.
Yes, I am. But it's more Seed, is what people tell me. Yeah, they're like, they have emotions and things. You're ripping off Gundam Seed. It's like, No, I'm not. No, visually, I'll give you that, but no, story, not really. I'm not Kiriyama, though. He's not crying every 5 seconds. So if anyone has watched Gundams, you get that reference, and we're happy. Although, I'll get to that story later. So basically, the point was, a lot of characters, it's like they like to, if you're aware of fandoms and people, they like to ship certain characters together and whatnot. And one person emailed me saying, I really like, you know, the dynamic between this character and this other character. It sucks that certain, I'm being very vague for intentional purposes here, things that happen in the stuff, that's really sad. So I got you this really uplifting porn image of your characters, followed by a transcript of a flash chat RP session of my characters.
I know that feel, bro.
And I'm like, at one point, I'm like, I'm flattered because, wow, you took the time to really like these characters. That's awesome.
On the other hand,
this is...
Don't cross the
street. Please? Don't cross the street. It's like, I was like, I really hope you're writing this with both hands.
They're not. You know they're not.
And I was like, thank you. Don't post this online. Thank you.
Or if they do post it online, post it on the archive of your own where you're legally not allowed to go.
Yeah, so that was a thing that happened.
Never sent it to the authors. Like, just...
No. I have a lot of voice actor friends, and
oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, I love them because I do voice acting, and they're fun, and a lot of I get
no,
to.
I mean, to them.
Oh, God, yeah. It's like they get a lot of.
Vic Mahelno is Vic Mahelno, but oh God.
But no, it's like they get a lot of tweets from followers that post very sexual things. Yeah. This just happened like last week, where like imposters going around. It's like. Okay, you guys.
I have unsavory thoughts about Travis Willingham, but I keep them to myself.
Well, he's Travis Willingham. Yeah. How can you not? Even I have unsavory thoughts about Travis Willingham.
Is that growl?
Not that I'm counting. I'm not counting this as my weird fan fiction. But there was erotic fan fiction of my first book. And at first, I'm like, oh my God, that's hilarious. I'm going to read it out loud. And I'm like, oh God, no. And what made me indignant is I'm like, that character is a lesbian. She would not do that.
You missed the context.
We have canonically bisexual and straight women, and you choose that one to give a blowjob. Unacceptable.
Thank you.
And to him. Not to him. No. He would no.
This is how you do it. That makes me happy. Thank you.
Yes. No. Can you compete?
Absolutely not.
Damn it.
My fan reactions have always been mostly positive. I got into a fight with one of my readers once about the Oxford comma.
Blood has been shed over that.
Oh, this was virtual blood. I mean, the forum thread just went on and on and on.
And sweat and also tears.
Oh, yes. Always.
Okay. Lots of things. And, yeah, that was fun. And then I got into a fight with him again later on. I wasn't provoking. I was debating, and then he took it to another level. I don't even remember what the last one was about. Something about Douglas Adams. He was calling Douglas Adams a hack.
Ah!
Right. And
for the record, that was Tom, not me.
And it just, when we went back and forth, and finally, like, he just decided he didn't want to read my comic anymore. Because we couldn't agree in the forum on something. And I found out, like, a year later, he had posted in another forum about what a horrible webcomic creator I was and how I didn't draw body proportions properly and I didn't take advice and I didn't do... And I'm like... Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And all I could do was laugh about it.
That's probably good publicity for you. Like,
yeah.
If you're getting, hey, people are like, let me check this guy out. Oh, he's not that bad. I'm going to subscribe to this.
Yeah.
Who knows? I might have gotten a few readers through that.
Yeah.
That was probably my worst, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're lucky.
What's your weird one?
So far.
All right. See, now I feel like I've blown my load, as it were. So let me tell you about... I'm going to say that this counts. So the Paranormal Romance Guild once reviewed one of my books. And there is sex. There's romance in my books. I mean, they're college students, so... And it's not overt, but there's sex going on. But they chose a book where the protagonist is asexual. And so I would sum up their critique as, there's only one character in this book who I want to sleep with, and nobody does. I'm giving you a bad review. I'm like, it's not romance. She's asexual. So, and that infuriated me.
That is a hurdle that I actually have to deal with a lot. So I'm writing a book that is queer, and I'm a woman writing a book that is queer.
You poor thing.
Yes. So, Hey. I'm a woman writing a book that is queer, and the only place to market books by women about queer people is the romance market. Because all y'all, presumably mostly straight white dudes, up here can just jump it. What? But you guys can just jump into the literary section, and your stuff can have porn in it and have darkness in it, right. And you can be your genre. But when a woman writes something targeted for other women, it immediately gets lumped into the romance category. And with this book, every single negative review I have gotten has been basically, I wanted a romance and I didn't get one. And I'm like, have you seen my cover? This is not a romance novel cover. This is a there's a dead body in the basement cover. Like, are you sure? You just see the name on the bottom and you think that these people are going to wind up happily ever after they spend the first six pages of the book wanting to kill each other?
Oh, that's really? What happens. The more they hate each other, the more they have to
Rumiko Takahashi is wrong sometimes. Sometimes. Ranma and Akane can get together, but the rest of the time.
No, I have a very good friend who writes lesbian YA, and she has told me the stories of people will buy the book and then give her negative reviews. Where's all the sex?
Yeah,
wasn't the point.
They assume that it's because it's queer. It's what it's going to be about,
right?
And it's kind of like how. I'm not going to get into the feminism 101 here, but let's just... I'm going to copy and paste everything that Tumblr has said for the past, 8 years and leave it there. And that discussion can be had in a much more nuanced format than a panel with one, with one queer lady on it. So we'll deal with that later. Anyway, it's really frustrating trying to get published when you're writing something that is interstitial, queer, and weird.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Deemer. She's also written under a bunch of pen names that I can't recall off the top of my head.
Alright, because I'm also looking for
your life. You'll be here tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'll contact her tonight. Get her other pen names.
Okay. I feel like this is not gonna be as exciting a question, but how often and how much do you tend to write?
I write in bursts. I use the Pomodoro method, which is really fun. That sounds really gross, I know. It literally just means tomato. It's like there's... Like when you have a little clock timer and you set it for, say, 15 minutes or so, and once the 15 minutes are up, then you can check your Twitter feed, then you can get up and use the bathroom and do whatever else you need to do, and then you just set it there. And I can usually knock out 3,000, 4,000 words in a day if I do it like that. I also write a lot on trains. Because I live in the city, and I like just taking my laptop and sitting on the A line or the MTA when I'm going to and from my day job, and I will just peck things out, because it's usually about the right length as well.
It varies, because my focus currently has shifted to animation, and it's like writing. I'm revising my first book again, and that's the book that I'm going to do full-on proper marketing and pushing. Because I ended up rebooting the original book into animated form, and then I was like it was a fresh start. It gave me a different chance to do different perspectives and flesh out other characters I didn't have before. So it's I have a day job, which is fun, but thankfully for the balanced day job, I'm able to write. I do web design, so no matter what I'm typing, so if I'm typing
they don't know,
and it's I'll get my job done. But when I do write, it's I tend to go in really big adrenaline spurts, a lot. I think the most I've done, I think I've done 8,000 words in a day. Mm-hmm. It's a weird thing. It's I'm a type of person where I go in mood shifts. So I'm okay, I'm in a writing mood. So this is all I'm doing. Everyone leave me alone. Don't talk to me. You're going to distract me. Currently, right now, I don't have a really good balance right now, because I'm desperately trying to finish an animation, and I'll do the writing at work and revising stuff and like that. So it's I think at the moment I'm doing maybe about 1,500 words a day. I want to do more, but it's I'm exhausted. Balance is hard.
I feel you. I'm a stay-at-home dad, and you would think, saying that, you probably have lots of time to write.
Nope.
No,
not at all. especially this past week when he had off of preschool. So most of my writing gets done when I take him to gymnastics class, actually, because then I got an hour where he's out there doing it and I can just sit there. And any other writing I do is just when I get 15 minutes to like an hour here and there during the day, when I'm not working on the webcomic, when I'm not cleaning the house, when I'm, you know, when I don't have anything else to do, which is almost never, which is why my books take 2 to 3 years to come out.
All right, I think I definitely ran spurts too. Once I was doing NaNoWriMo, and during that one sitting, fed on a lot of diet soda at Panera, I wrote 6,000 words. And I'm like, I could write more, I could write forever, I'm going to go to sleep. But usually I write less than that, and especially like I can sit and I can write stories all day, and then it's like, oh, I have to edit that into something good. I don't want to. And I just sort of chip away at it. So this is going to be a gross analogy. It's like I'm just piling a whole bunch of crap in a place, and I eventually have to turn that into a sculpture. And I don't really want to do that. I excrete it. It's there. But I know that I have to. I know that if I work really hard, this pile of crap is going to turn into something beautiful. But I don't want to put my hands in it again.
Mm. I feel that way about editing.
Yeah.
I think everyone feels that way about
editing. That's my favorite part of the
process. Oh, my God.
You are weird.
I'm exceptionally weird.
That is not.
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention, there's this program called WriteMonkey, and it basically just like turns your screen black. You just see the text. You can make it click like it's a typewriter. And I mentioned this in an interview, and WriteMonkey made me like not their spokesperson, but on one of their quotes on their page, it's like, Tom Quackenbush, fantasy author, says this. I'm like, I guess I did. That makes me feel legitimate. Thank you.
You know, Micah Word has that now, actually, too. They have, like, I forgot what it was called. I think it's, like, Focus Mode or something like that. Mm. Where it just, everything's black but the document now.
WriteMonkey must be so upset. It was a free software, too. Like, they're like, you can upgrade. I'm like, I could, but I'm not gonna.
Yeah. I'm a writer. I don't have that kind of cash.
Right.
What are you talking about? Make money? What?
Ooh, I'm gonna make that my new question. All right. Sarah, how are sales? What does the royalty look like? Can we talk about money here?
We can talk a little bit about money here, but this is my first book, and it's only been out for 4 weeks.
Okay, so you don't...
Yes, it has only been out for 4 weeks. I have seen no royalties, but I am on Riptide's bestseller page after only 4 weeks of stuff on it.
I follow Riptide on Tumblr. I'm like, oh, she's by Riptide. I like Riptide because I'm really snotty, and I'm like, yeah. Oh, I don't like that publisher. But Riptide's fine because I follow them on Tumblr.
Yes, well, Riptide's very nice, and as for what royalties I can expect out of it, they're, like, I get a percentage. It's nicer if you buy straight from the publisher than if you go through Amazon. And if you buy my book at the table... Did it go out?
No, it's
if you buy my book at the table, I will sign it gratis, and you're paying the exact same price you would online, and also lightening my suitcase on the way home. So I'll know about sales at the end of this weekend.
Adam?
It's varied, actually. Like, when I first did it, because I didn't do marketing, it was kind of like, here, Dad, shut the hell up, leave me alone now. I did it. Because I was always very, very reluctant to publish. I was very diehard on doing traditionally. And talking with agents and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And basically, I'm like, your writing's good. Your synopsis is good. Your pitch is good. No one will buy this, but there's no market for this. Go to Japan. It's like...
There is no market whatsoever for large white men in Japan.
Yeah, so. It's like, I am half white, so that's a thing.
When I was submitting to publishers, like, I have a, you know, a... intelligent, geeky, female protagonist who rises above, and one publisher's like, asked specifically for like that, like to a T, I'm like, you'll love my book, they're like, we don't know why you sent this, I'm like, did you read the synopsis, did you look at it, fine, but I think that they were looking not for the straight white man author.
Yeah,
I myself was not sellable, and I think that authors need to be, they need to have faces. Yeah. They need to come and do conventions.
It was definitely an eye-opening experience in the publishing world, because originally it was like, oh, if you're a talented writer, you're definitely going to get published. That has nothing to do with it at all.
I know so
at
many all. Talented writers who are just...
Yeah, it's like, yeah. And then there's people who aren't talented that get published and get movies.
I'm sorry, I had a little something
in my throat. Wow.
She is... Okay.
Okay, all right. Okay. That's a thing.
No, I'm not going to defend her. I'm not going to defend her for 1 second. I am, however, going to justify some of the shit that she pulled.
Okay.
She was a marketing genius, and when she was writing 50 Shades of Crap in its original incarnation, which was a Twilight AU fanfic called Masters of the Universe. She
I'm good. Masters of the Universe, no E-Man.
It's fine.
The image of Dolph Lundgren.
No, it's...
And now it's
He tries. Oh my God, does he try? He tries all the time. In this institution. But no, when E.L. James was writing Masters of the Universe, she took advantage of the format on fanfiction.net in order to generate as much press as she possibly could. She posted things in exceedingly short chapters so that it would always be bumped up. Yeah. She posted frequently, and she had an entire horde of semi-paid fangirls who would comment on the thing. And since fanfiction.net allows people to comment more than once and to rate more than once, if you're posting 80 chapters a week, even if you have, not a week, but if you're posting 80 chapters in a month, you have five people, that's still 400 hits, and people are going to click it to see what all the fuss is about. So whether it's good or not, she gave herself the illusion of being marketable for sufficient enough time.
She played that game.
For sufficient enough time.
Isn't her husband a press agent? He was in the biz.
Yeah. Yo, so that helps too.
Yeah.
It's like,
again, there are plenty of... when you say there are plenty of talented people who have not gotten published and plenty of untalented people, I say that E.L. James is exceedly talented, just not as a writer.
Right. And that's a very good point.
She could be my agent.
I know, it's like, wait a minute, that's an idea. It's like, oddly enough, I actually get more revenue. I did get some sales on the books, and when it first came out, you know, some people did buy it, which was fine. But I actually get, animation-wise, I get more royalties right now from that. Mm. And I'm also, animation, because I'm a writer, first and foremost. It's like, I taught myself how to animate because it was like, I saw Gundam. That's awesome. I write mecha. I want to see this animated. Let's learn how to do this somehow and rip stuff off. And this has also become my marketing because I'm about to finish, you know, my season finale. And then after that, it's basically like, all right, till the season's over, I'm going to be doing something else for a bit. But if you want to know what happens from this cliffhanger, go buy the book.
Yeah.
So, it's like, see how that goes, but that's my money experience.
Pete?
Yeah, I don't make a whole lot of money off the books, and for the same reason that, what's her name there?
Erica.
Does, yes. Yeah. It is, when you're self-publishing, it is a game, and you have, one of the big things is you have to have quantity out there, and you have to be pumping something out.
Yeah.
I'm actually not self-published.
No.
No, like this is...
Oh, no, no, I'm just saying I am, and that's, I figured, I can do this, I do everything else myself.
And you can't.
And,
you can't.
You can't. It's a very rigged game, and I can't put out books fast enough to catch people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people do it, and they're like, oh, you just have to learn to write faster, you know, you just don't worry about quality, more or less. And I'm just like, I can't do that. I write because I love the craft, and I want my books to be good. So I don't see a whole lot of sales from that. But my webcomic, I'm on Patreon, which is an amazing platform.
Mm-hmm.
If you aren't familiar with it, what it does is any creative person, musician, writer,
filmmaker,
can get on there and you can pledge them money per month or per project. And so I'm on the per month thing. So people can come on and they can say, oh, I'll give you $1 a month or I'll give you $5 a month. I have a few people that are doing $20 a month.
Wow.
And, it's pretty amazing because it's first of all, it's very encouraging. You're like, oh, I have people that really love me enough to want to support me like this. And then in return, you give them gifts. You know, so I give out like digital wallpapers or sneak peeks at the upcoming strips and things like that. So that, and most of my money comes from that and from the website. You know, ad revenue and things like that.
Yeah,
so.
I'm actually setting up a Patreon to launch soon, pretty much for that same exact reason. So
some of my favorite people are on Patreon. I'm a huge fan of the Extra Credits series, which is,
We had him last year.
I know. I saw the website, and I thought, oh, my God, James is coming? No.
Yeah.
No! And anyway, he's awesome, but I love that their Patreon setup is you get to vote on what the next content is for Extra History.
Oh, wow.
You get to, so they... they have a whole section. I mean, obviously, all of their game stuff is still going, but the extra history stuff is starting to help pay for the gaming stuff. And since Extra History is a fan project, they propose three topics, and if you are on a Patreon subscriber who helps them out, you get to vote on which of those next topics they do. So I think that that's a really cool way of engaging with your community, and I wish that Patreon worked better for people who communicate only in text.
Yeah, I don't know too many writers that really utilize it.
No, it's hard. I mean, yeah. Writers work on Kickstarter, I've noticed, but the thing with Kickstarter is you have to have the product, otherwise people are going to call it.
Oh, yeah, that was Kickstarter.
On a local writer group, some guy's like, I just want you to give me $10,000 and I'll write my science fiction novel. And I'm like, how about we give you nothing?
Yeah.
Because I wrote my book knowing I would get royalties. I'm not asking for money in advance because I might write a book.
Yeah. No, I used Kickstarter when I was writing a musical, actually.
I would kickstart that.
Yeah, no. It was awesome. I was writing a musical about professional dominatrices. It's called Dog Boy and Justine.
I would definitely kickstart
Yeah. It's totally in your wheelhouse. Like, I know your kinks now, just sitting next to you. But we kickstarted it because we had written the musical, but we needed to mount it, which is a horrible word to use now that I think about it.
No, it's not. It's perfect.
So we needed money to book the theater and pay the actors and all those things. And to workshop a musical, I mean, obviously some of the stuff hadn't been written yet, but if you're using Kickstarter, you have to have something to put up there.
Yeah, it's not how it used
to
be.
Yeah, we showed rehearsal videos from a previous musical that I had done, which was based on Inception, a film from a couple years ago. And we used that to promote it. We just did interviews, but people will still call you a fraud if you don't have the actual physical product ready for
it. It's gotten bad. Kickstarter first came out, it was very much, oh, this is such a great idea, you could just go help people. Because everyone's like, that's so cool. And then there were frauds going on where people didn't follow through, and that stigma happened.
Yep, and then Amanda Palmer happened, and she is, again, with the marketing genius thing, but if you're not going to pay your musicians...
Yeah, no, it's... Because I was a voice director for a recent indie game that was trying to get kickstarted.
Mm-hmm.
It made, like, $9,000 out of, like, needing 90, so that didn't go anywhere. But they're going to try again, but it's like they had some stuff. We did, like, trailers for it, and I got to voice direct some people that I grew up listening to, which was awesome.
Awesome.
I was like, I'm voice directing Dr. Robotnik from Sonic the Hedgehog. That's fantastic and so weird.
Jim Cummings?
No, Mike Pollack. The video games after. If it was Jim Cummings, that would have been like...
Oh, no, I think it was the cartoon.
You know, he was. If it was him, that would have been yeah. I'd be like, I can't do this because I'm... It's just, I trust you.
Yeah.
But it's like, it didn't go anywhere. It didn't get funded, you know. Mm. They're going to try again, but it didn't get funded. They had videos, but they didn't have enough content to make people think, oh, this is going to be a thing. We trust you. We're going to do this. And so Kickstarter is very difficult now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, if you're looking for a job, let's put it in this way. How many of you have looked for jobs and like, oh, entry-level position, you need 5 years experience and all this other stuff. But it's like, okay, that's cool, but to get the experience, I need the entry-level position.
Yeah.
So what are we doing? It's basically that now. It's like you need to have your product made for nothing before you can get...
Gone are the days of Undertale and Anita Sarkeesian. Like, gone are the days.
Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, people making money on Kickstarter.
Before we get off the topic of money, I do want to point out I just got my royalty statement from Double Dragon. $3.41. So, I mean, I'm rich. I can... Thank you. But conversely, I also have things that were published through CreateSpace, and I get seriously more money from that. And I see that money monthly. Like, every month I'm like, oh, you're giving me money again? That's weird. Really?
Are you sure?
And it's a direct deposit into my account. And I mean, it's not a lot, but it's like $10, $20 every month. And I'm like, people bought things? That's good. Whereas I look assiduously, like, I'm always looking at, did my Double Dragon thing sell? Are my novels out there? Are people buying them? And I get way more money if you buy them from the con than if you buy them through Double Dragon. So you might want to just buy my books now.
Yeah.
And they're also cheaper if you buy them from me, because they keep raising the price. So buy them from me now. Okay.
Questions?
Anyone?
How much
are my books? Artificial Gods is 15, We Shadows and Dance Macabre are, I think, 16 or 17. I'll have to see what it says on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think they're edging up almost $20 each on Amazon.
Backup is 20 flat. If you buy it on Kindle or Nook edition or any e-reader edition, it's only 7.
Way better.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so what are your forthcoming projects? You wrote this. What are you going to write now?
Okay, I actually have a 3-book thing coming out, Love in the Time of Gamergate, I have been calling it, which is a horrible idea, but it's also going to be brilliant.
It's a great idea. That's marketing genius.
Thank
right
you.
There.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah, that's just going to sell.
It is a genderqueer 12th night kind of plot where... people meet online, people masquerade as the wrong gender online, people discover that wrong gender may be right gender, people go to a convention and pretend to be two people at once, and then there's also people getting doxxed while this is going on. So it's a farce on a serious subject, and yes, there will be porn. But that is the next thing. That's a 3-book series with the 3 different roommates. Our genderqueer... I'll say heroine for now in the first one, and her 2 roommates, one of whom is a career drag queen and also a Square Enix fanboy, and the other of whom watched far too much Utena as a young lady. So they all find love in various forms of internet navigation. It's kind of inspired by how I met my wife. So there's that. And this, if it does a little, like, if it actually gets any notice, then the publisher will let me write 2 more books set in the same universe. If this one is the Bacchae, the next one is kind of going to be the Orestia. And the one after that is going to be a doorstopper kind of modern Iliad thing in which people are writing songs at each other and the gods are praying on them, and it's beautiful. But yeah, so there's the dark one, and then there's Love in the Time of Gamergate.
Cool.
Right now, like, animation thing, finishing this, updated first book of Shattered Heaven is going to be coming out in summer. The other reason why I did that was because I realized, okay, people have been watching animation. If they're going to go straight to the book, it would make more sense if the book is not disconnected from the rebooted animation, so I should fix that. So then also, I'm currently revising the 3rd novel in this, and there's another book that I started writing. The other book, and I'm coming up with a name because it was a story me and an ex came up with at one point that I really liked it, and she just kind of fell off, and then we fell apart, and I liked it, and I didn't want it to die.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, it's like, this was a cool idea. So that's going to be a book that I'm going to be pushing. I don't have a title for it yet because I'm like, I don't want to call it the one that was our name at the time. It would just be awkward. But that'll be like a female protagonist, which is interesting for me as a male writing a female protagonist, but I wanted to because I like writing female characters because they are fun to write.
I promise there's no difference except that we're more aware of our surroundings.
I had conversation with a lot of women writers because a lot of other writers, like, I'm like, it's like, a lot of people attempt to write female characters, and they either go the full extreme of, like, hi, I'm independent and I hate men, or they go the way that's just a cliché, and it's like, why can't they just be normal people?
Yeah, like, people.
It's like, they're people. Okay. It's like,
or sometimes they're vaginas, before Tumblr gets on me, you don't have to have a vagina to be a woman. Okay, I want to correct myself right here.
You get to edit this podcast. You can eliminate that statement.
We don't. We don't. Listen. We don't want to offend Tumblr. We don't need to be doxxed.
No.
We don't need that happening.
No, it's happened to me before, and I hated it.
Oh God. No.
But Stephanie, stuff. But I promise. Speaking as the only person with a vagina on this panel, I think.
You think.
You're correct.
Am I right? Okay.
I can vouch for myself.
Speaking as the only identified woman on this panel, that's probably a more politically correct way to say it. There is no difference except the societal implications that we have to deal with constantly. When women write male characters, we kind of don't have to deal with those societal implications a lot of the time. It's one of the reasons I do it so often, because I don't necessarily want to juggle all of the expectations that would be heaped on this character as a woman. But when I write female characters, that's basically what I do, because I'm used to seeing this all the time. And when people complain that my male characters are too feminine for whatever reason, it's probably because they're aware and afraid of the stuff that might be going on around them. That is literally the only freaking difference. Is that most women have to contend with the fact that society sees them as women, whereas men don't get seen as anything.
True.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's
no disagreements.
Okay.
What was the question? Oh,
forthcoming projects. Yes. We work for now.
Thinking Tumblr and all sorts of
stuff. Yeah, Tumblr messes everything up.
It certainly ate my life.
I'm in the midst of writing the sequel to one of the books that I'm selling at my table this weekend. It's Blood of the Father. The first one was Blood of the Mother. It's an epic fantasy kind of thing. It's a lot more character-driven than plot-driven, which I don't know if people like or they don't like yet. That's just me. I like writing characters.
Characters are fun.
Plot just bogs me down. So I just kind of make the characters and I throw them into a world and I say, what are you going to do now? Mm-hmm. And then obviously the webcomic is just a constantly updating thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be coming up with some pretty, not epic storylines, but epic in terms of the characters again. So,
mm-hmm. Rock's starting to fall.
Yeah.
And then everyone dies. That's so sad.
Oh, I killed
I always think that someday I get. Sometimes I just get so fed up with my comic. Like, I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to draw everybody dies, and that's just put it up on the web.
Put it in the Omake and give it to the Patreon subscribers.
Yeah. Okay. So, my forthcoming projects I should discuss.
Please do.
So I'm working on, the fourth book in the Nightstream series, which is called As Flies to Wanton Boys, and they changed the title ever so slightly. They put that as in there because they felt that people would not want to read a book about flies. But it's not about that. It's about a plague killing supernatural things. So that should be out in April or May. They're really indecisive. And I'm working on another sequel that then will spawn yet another sequel because there's a time jump in the middle of the next book, spoilers. And so in that, things have to happen to the other characters to justify what happens in the second half of the current book. So, good stuff. Maybe I'll put up more Kindle stories, because that's why I'm making money, as people are buying my 99 cents Kindle stories.
Yeah, and then
month.
They find everything else, yeah.
Yeah, and I would like if they're, like, I thought the Kindle thing would be like, oh, we like the story, let's buy the book, but it's if we like the story, crickets. And that's where they stop.
Yeah, that's...
But for the effort, I mean, the first thing I ever published was a contest victory in the now-defunct Filament magazine, which is straight up fucking porn. And if Dr. Pisani over in Skinner found out that I'd written it, he'd probably kill me. But the first thing I did with that, I sat down for 2 hours, I banged out 3,000 words, I got a check for $100, and I realized that I just made $100 in 2 hours. And like that's how the little things happen. If you can do the little things, then you can keep doing the little things, and people will draw more attention to your larger projects eventually.
As a side, actually, kind of leapfrogging on that. Recently, a book about juvenile justice was put out, and there's an essay by me in there, mm-hmm. and it was literally like, "Oh, we'd like you to write this essay because I work with juvenile delinquents, literally." Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, "Great!" And I'm like, "Here's my first draft." They're like, "No, that's good. You're done. Here's your check." I'm like, "Wait, what?"
Yeah.
Like that took me 45 minutes. I was sitting there like writing it on an old PDA. It was really like that much effort that I put into it. You're like, no, that's fine. That's exactly what we wanted. Good job. And I'm like, I just made like $100 like that quick. I can do that. Because it's like pulling teeth to sell books. I'm like, I could just sell an essay like that.
Unless it's Huffington Post.
Who pays you nothing?
Don't do it.
Yes. They're like, you should be grateful for the exposure.
I hate that.
Exposure only helps strippers.
It's like, oh, well, you know, we can't afford to pay you right now, but you'll get exposure. It's like, yeah, well, exposure doesn't give me food.
Yeah.
It's like, I did have the one book that I did get published traditionally, which is not a book I normally write. It's like, I wrote randomly a blog post review on a script writing software that I found that just came with like Adobe, like CS5.5. I was like, oh, this is a cool thing. I need to start writing in proper script format. Let's do that. I was like, wow, this works really well. I wrote a stupid review on a blog randomly. And then like a publisher contacted me because they found that, hey, you want to write a book of this? I was like, it's like, we'll give you money. Okay. I was like, how does this? Oh, okay. I think this makes sense. Yeah, that's fine. That's it. Here's a check. What?
Yeah.
It's like, can we do that with my nonfiction that I'm passionate about? That would be awesome. No.
No, it's never what you're passionate about.
No.
It's like, let's pay you for... Yeah.
Yeah, that.
I think there's this... yes? Yeah. I think there's this interesting dichotomy, like, if you're doing it for the art, you should expect to not get paid for it. And if you're
I hate that.
No.
And it lets me know that you actually care. Like, yes. I've done the whole free download thing on Amazon. It's like, great. So yeah. 300 people downloaded that story. Am I going to get a review? Are they going to say that they liked it? Am I going to get, like, Goodreads? No, nothing.
Nothing.
No. But the thing is, that this is why coming up through the fanfiction community. Stuff that you do for fanfic, you can't make any money on it because it's not yours fundamentally. Right. But the fact that you do it anyway, that is some of the most charitable work you can do. You are providing other people with free entertainment, and you get used to expecting, thank goodness, you get used to expecting that the stuff that you really love is not going to net you any money. But it is going to net you audience, and your audience does have money. I couldn't have produced my musical without the people that had read my Inception fanfiction. I couldn't have produced this book without the people who've helped me along on the way up, and it does eventually pay off when you do that kind of stuff over and over, and you do get to appreciate it. I just wish it didn't.
Yeah,
it's... I really wish it didn't. I wish I could have gotten paid for some of this stuff from the beginning.
I feel like money really inhibits me too, because every time I write something, like, even if it's a blog post, I'm like, so how am I going to turn this to something that actually makes me money and gets me the attention I want, which comes from those little direct deposits Amazon gives me.
Yeah.
But I really, like, in the back of my head, it's always like, well, I could write about my life, but why?
Yeah, I get that one, too.
Yeah.
It is an interesting life, but
try.
Even then, it has to be interesting to other people.
Yeah.
No offense, I'm sure your life
no,
is...
No, writing can be really masturbatory. Like, it feels good, and then it's over. So it's like masturbating online. And you can make a lot of money masturbating online, but
you
that's
can.
A different topic.
Yes. Yes, there are books about cam whores. They're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
God.
Diablo Cody, who made Juno in Jennifer's Body, basically was a stripper, wrote a book about being a stripper, and then became Diablo Cody. Which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
If I strip, I don't think I'd have her kind of thing.
I'm not going to say anything.
I'm flattered. All right. So, what book, show, movie do you wish you had written?
Pass.
Oh, you won't say that.
All right, so pretend that you could be the author of something that you're not the author of, or like a TV show that you're like, I wish I had created that.
Oh, hey. Oh, that's interesting.
That's evil.
That is, wow.
Oh, I know who I'd want to be. I would want to be Jen Urobuchi. I would want to be the guy who created Madoka and Fate Zero and all the light novels
evil,
that he's done.
I agree.
Yes,
such
thank
a good
you.
Choice.
Yes. No, he's evil. He's successful at being evil. He gets to write all of the nerdy, wonderful stuff he wants and make digressions from Alexander the Great to motorcycles. And he gets to tell wonderful, heartwarming stories about young women and the amount of pain they inflict on each other. So if I could be another author and have another author's success and oeuvre, I would want to be Jen Urobuchi. There.
Okay.
I can't decide. Skip me for now.
Okay. Pete, do you have an answer?
Sort of, yeah. It's not that I want to actually be somebody else, but I've always wanted to write a series of books based on Final Fantasy VI.
You didn't
that
say seven. You
time.
I did not say seven.
You did not say seven.
No, you didn't say seven.
Congratulations.
Six. Oh, my
Final
God.
Final Fantasy VI has always been my favorite game out of the series, and I hate seven. I'm sorry. I know I'm going to get rocks thrown at me for that, but
not
I never like seven. Six, I just, I think it lends itself to such a great, it would be such a great
it's a beautiful,
series.
And it's a beautiful setting, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you mentioned before that you like, this is fangirl hour, you mentioned before that you particularly like telling stories about characters mm-hmm. and having them unified by the setting, and that's the hallmark of Six.
Absolutely.
Because especially after the World of Ruin happens, spoiler, this game is almost as old as I am, but especially after that happens, I can see where the influence would be, and I guess that's part of where Bardsworth comes from as well, I
absolutely.
Guess. So that would be so amazing.
I love that game, and I would love if Square would work
release
with me.
Release it?
And, yeah.
No, I feel that way about Suikoden, actually. Like, I wrote a project a long time ago. Now there are no nerds in the room who know Suikoden. Anyone? Fuck yes! Okay, I actually wrote a cyberpunk Suikoden many years ago. Like, All Men Are Brothers Except Big Brother is Watching. It was supposed to be set 500 years after Suikoden 3. Something like that. And crazy shit. Some people pop up again because True Runes. But I've always wanted to do something like that set in that universe and project onto it. So I totally understand how you feel. God.
Alright, so I had to look his name, because I didn't want to say his name wrong.
Okay.
But if I really wanted to do something, like be a different author or writer or whatnot, or director, I would really prefer to take Fukuda from Gundam Seed and do it right, because he screwed that up so bad, because it was alright, and then it had no budget, and then he listened to his wife, and then he listened to fans, and then it got really convoluted and bad. And I would love to do it better.
Not everyone can be Kill 'Em All Tomino.
No, they can't.
Not everyone can be Tomino.
No, and he's so mean too, Tomino.
I know.
He's so mean.
You can tell, like the formative years up in here. He's so evil.
He's, oh yeah. I like
everything you love will die. Everything.
He's like my.
He will drop a colony on your heart.
He is my spirit animal, because I have my friend. Funny, my friend when he was first, because one of my voice actor friends, I gave him the book, the first book to read, you know, and he read it, and I was just waiting for certain reactions.
Mm-hmm.
I love doing that when I have friends that are going to read a book. It's like there are certain parts in books I want.
The red
to
wedding equivalent.
Oh, yeah. I had my red wedding, okay. And he literally texted me. He's like, "Did you just do a red wedding?" I was like, "You have no idea. Keep reading." He's like, did you just kill? Yep. Half your. Yep. Is it? No. There's going to be. Yep. I kill people a lot.
Someone's going to edit that one out of the podcast. Maybe.
Spin this one up. All right. I'm going to ask me the question now. All right. If I could be anyone or take any, or just study, apprentice under Brian Fuller. And he made the shows that get canceled all the time. He made Hannibal, Wonder Falls, Pushing Daisies, Dead Like Me, and the only season of Heroes that ever existed. I won't hear guff about season two. It didn't exist. There's only one season of Heroes.
It really is a pity, because they had such a wonderful format and they were setting up for something so
and
amazing.
They fired him and abandoned it.
Yeah.
But did you know, aside from Heroes, that's the same universe. The same happy, colorful universe of Pushing Daisies is technically the universe of Hannibal, because they have characters that cross over. And I love the idea that, you know, you have this, like, intricate serial killer going here, being just so gay. So gay. And that's the same universe where it's like, you know...
Excuse
you
me, bisexuals exist. Hello, Clarice.
No, I'm sorry. There's no way that Will Graham actually feels anything toward any woman, but God, does he feel something toward Hannibal.
No, I meant Hannibal.
It's true. Hannibal might be bisexual. Will Graham is Hannibal sexual. All right. But I just love the idea that, you know, that these stories can be told, like, just right next door to each other.
Mm.
And that is what I want to do. Like, and it's, they're witty and they're clever and they're so pretty. Like, even Hannibal, it's like, I know it's a human heart, but God, do I want to eat it. And I want that. I want to write the way that he makes shows. And I'm not there yet, but at least I have something to aspire to.
Yes.
Okay.
And if not, I'm sure you can take someone's heart right now and just put it on a spit.
Got your heart? All right. How do you feel about your early work? I think you, Erica, seem pretty fond of it.
Actually, yeah. I have a live journal. It is ancient. It dates back to when I was at Vassar.
See, I didn't think anyone else had one of
those. No, I don't keep it anymore. I stopped keeping it in, like, 2000... I stopped keeping it in 2009, except for Yuletide, which I still do every year. But I go back and I read my old work. Not my super, super old work, not the Tolkien fiction from when I was 15, but a lot of the stuff from my 19s and 20s and the stuff that I wrote when I was here. I still go back and I check it out once in a while. Some of it's not that great. A lot of it is I'm totally studying for the GREs, and I know what the word Caliban means, so I'm going to put it in. And a lot of tropes keep coming back that I love to address, but... in particular, so anyone played Final Fantasy VIII in here?
Yep.
Okay.
I like that one better than Final Fantasy
VII. Don't talk to my wife, she's going to kill you. I wrote an enormous gender reversal epic of Final Fantasy VIII. I was in high school at the time. This was my international baccalaureate independent study. I swear to God, I managed to pass fanfic off, get school credit for it, and get a perfect score. Very happy about it. But at the time, I was fascinated by the idea of, well, if everyone's gender in that game was flipped, what would it do to the game? And I went on for pages and pages of it. And I abandoned it probably in chapter 100, right after I left Vassar, actually, which is equivalent of the game when they spring her from the Esthar prison and like Ragnarok has already landed and the endgame is about to start. Stuff. Anyway, I saw Jupiter Ascending last year. And Jupiter Ascending is everything I should have been told when I was 15 about my writing being okay. For years, I was ashamed of like all the horrible tropes that I had put in this thing. I would describe clothing in loving detail. I would insert love triangles into the mix. Everything was full of sexual tension, which apparently was bad. I don't know. A lot of, you know, first-person wankery. There was song fic in that thing. I swear to God, I used Spirit Dreams Inside from the horrible Final Fantasy movie, The Spirit Was Within.
That movie never happened.
Yes, it did. It happened because I've seen the Thriller parody MV on YouTube. God. But either way, I kind of had a little bit of an awakening after I saw Jupiter Ascending that it's okay. Your juvenilia is okay. Because Jupiter Ascending is totally what Lana Wachowski was writing with her brother when she was 15.
Yeah.
Like, it's their Shadowrun campaign from when they were teenagers. And you see that, and it's like, it's over the top, it's gratuitous, and it's beautiful, and it's good, and it's inspiring. And that's basically how I feel about a lot of my older work. Like, it is a bountiful field, and it is a great window into who I was, and it's full of the things that I love, and if I can distill the things that I love with the tools that I now have, then I can just keep growing as a writer. And I'm probably going to say the same thing in 10 years. Yes? Oh, question.
Tropes. I feel like people say tropes are automatically bad. Are they? Or
no.
Tropes
are not only bad, and even TV tropes will tell you tropes are not cliches. Okay. Cliches are automatically bad, but not bad because they're bad. Cliches are bad because they're lazy. Cliches have assumptions, and they play on those assumptions that your audience has. If you're playing on an assumption that your audience has consciously, that's a trope, if you're doing it on purpose. So I don't think that they're bad at all. Tropes are wonderful, but some specific tropes can feel a little uncomfortable. Yes, as they say.
So, my second book, Dance Macabre, dealt with my vampire tropes and how I wanted to sort of take them down. I had one reviewer who read, like, the first tenth of it, where I set up the tropes. She's like, I've read this kind of book. I know what's going to happen. I'm like, I had to set the tropes up so I could knock them down. You need to keep reading the book. But she gave me a terrible review because I stopped reading reviews, actually, after her. Because I'm like, you didn't read the book. You don't get to comment on it. It's like you heard the beginning of a joke. You're like, I don't get the punchline. You didn't hear the punchline.
Yeah. But no, and even if you don't deconstruct it, it's perfectly valid to put the tropes up. Just know what you're doing. My composition professors used to say, are you writing like Wagner because that's the only way you know how to write, or are you writing like Wagner because you're consciously writing like Wagner? If you're writing, are you writing a vampire story because this is how vampire stories are supposed to go, or are you writing a vampire story because you want to tell a story that has these tropes in it and you want to play with your audience's assumptions about where it's going to go? There's nothing wrong with either way. Question. Is that for all of us? Go first.
Spite. And let me explain. This was actually going to dovetail with one of my questions with how I got published, because I'd been marketing or just sending out letters for Wee Shadows, and I kept getting rejection letters, and I put them on the refrigerator, and the woman I lived with felt that was morbid, but I figured each rejection letter brought me one closer to the success.
Yes.
So I was arguing online with a friend who was very anti-technological. And she's like, you wouldn't want your book to be an ebook because people could steal it. That's exactly why I'd want my book to be an ebook. And so I Googled biggest ebook publisher, and Double Dragon came up, and I mailed it to them. And they said they had a 6-month turnaround, so I'd hear in 6 months. 2 weeks later, they're like, we like you. I'm like, that's a weird way to reject me. They're like, wait, you want me? So because I'm like, no, I will prove you wrong. And even though they're going to reject me, but they accepted me because they saw the potential there. So that was it. And the other one, I think marrying well helped me. Because my wife is really supportive, and she was already an artist. She already came to no such convention, and saw how I caught myself there. I know. And she's like, "Oh, you should do this." And then the next year, I'm like, "Hey, would you like me to be a guest?" And they said, "Sure. How much money do you want?" I'm like, "You'll pay me. I'll get money. All right." And honestly, just going out and meeting people, going to conventions, because I've done a few conventions, and NSCon is my favorite. It helps because I see how other people respond to my work and get excited at my work, and care about me, follow me online. You know, while I've stopped reading reviews, I like that people follow my Tumblr. I like that I occasionally get happy questions. Someone asks me on Tumblr, like, "Oh, can I bring you a present?" And I'm like, "You don't have to. Why would you bring me a present?" So yeah, I think meeting other people and reading a lot, because, you know, going to the question that I asked you guys about, how do you feel about your early work, is I really feel kind of embarrassed about my early work, because now I'm so much better. Like, every time I deal with a competent editor, I'm like, "Oh, I see, that's the thing I do, that's the trope I'm leaning on, I won't do that anymore. I head hopped a little bit." Like, I look back at my early things and I'm like, "That's my freshman effort, and I'm a senior now. You should read my senior work."
What is head hopping?
That's where it's like you're in the story and you're telling how the focal character thinks, and the next person's like, "And she thought this, and then he thought that."
But, changing POV mid.
Right. Yeah. But no one's actually doing anything, they're just thinking at each other. And they're not telepaths, so it's not okay.
Yeah. So, I guess I successfully, I don't know how much money I'm going to make on this, so I can tell you that the reason I'm making any money at all is because I have a publicist and she's awesome. I suck at social media. My God, do I suck at social media. I am terrified of it. I am terrified of saying the wrong thing because you've heard me talk right now. When you hear me talk, you understand that I'm being flip and sarcastic. And when you see me type, you cannot see that, and things can automatically get taken out of context, and I have been doxxed, and it sucks.
Right, and so, they would pull a receipt from when you were, like, a tyke and be like, "You know, you had a problematic opinion back in the day. You wrote it down."
I hate that word so much. God. But I don't know whether I'm successful or not yet. We'll find that out. How I got published in the first place, my chief attribute is actually determination. I would say that in the total Undertale sense of the word, I kept save scumming. I would find different people to do it, and I did not give up on anything. With this project, it took me a year to hear back from these guys. A year. I sent it to them in 2013 when the first draft was done. And it got lost in their system. Their first reader got fired for it. They completely forgot it until they moved servers. They contacted me with an enormous apology. They said, "We like it. You need to change the tense." I took 3 months to change the book from third person to first person. 3 months. And then after that, 37 more cycles of edits. I am successful at this, and I am good at this, because if it's not done, it's not done. And I will keep doing it until I get it right. And that's how.
A mix of spite and determination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah, that's writing.
Yeah, that's writing.
It's like, I don't like saying if I'm successful or not. I hate that. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, I have like this fear that if I ever acknowledge, "Yeah, I'm successful," I'm going to become satisfied and like stagnant. And I'm not going to try and keep pushing myself to do better. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm gonna add the early work thing into it as well.
Please.
It's like, I was very embarrassed by it, a lot of my earlier work, but at the same time, I'm still proud of my earlier work, because without my earlier work, I wouldn't be here where I am now. Mm-hmm. Where people are like, "Hey, you want to be a guest at a con? Are you sure? You what? Okay, if you want to." You know, and a lot of times I'll find things in my earlier work like, "Wow, this was not written well, but the idea is cool. I'm going to take that idea and do it better."
Tools you got now.
Yeah, it's like, I like that tremendously. And like, and especially when it comes to like the animation aspect of it. I'm going to talk more about the actual animation process. Tomorrow I have an animation panel. Mm-hmm. Now I'm shamelessly plugging, where I will discuss animation things. And that's like tomorrow, like 9. And I'll be showing videos too. But a lot of people, like, in this day and age, animations online and whatnot, it's very, if you're not, like, really short attention span, it's very difficult to get anywhere. Because a lot of it's like, oh, it's going to be viral. If it's not viral, it's not good or anything. Like, because I put out episodes like 10 minutes because I long-form storytelling. I'm a writer that is doing a story in visual format, so it's like, I'm going to make the characters in this whole development. It's going to take a while. And I'm told consistently that, no, you're not going to be successful with this. You know, you're not gonna make a lot of money off this. It's just not going to work because it's too long and people don't have the attention span to do that. It's like I have...
Homestuck is successful.
Oh, then it got, like, then it just dragged out. Homestuck. I'm not even going to go into Homestuck. I refuse.
Can we talk about it later?
Oh, yeah, we could talk about Homestuck. Thank you. Okay. But it's like I have friends, like, I don't know if anyone's watched any YouTube animations or web series, or if anyone knows who Chris Niosi is, or Kerberfer, or anything like that. It's like, him and I are friends, and he's very comparable to me, but the difference between him and I, going back to something you said, it's like, he did a lot of parody work in the beginning, and he did a lot of fan content, and that's where his main audience came from.
Yeah.
And me being a prideful prick, I didn't do a lot of fan work in the beginning. It's just, I was like, I like my story. I am focused on this. This is my passion. This is what I'm writing. This is what I'm doing. So I never built up I'm trying to build up an audience from original work, which is extremely difficult to do.
Yeah.
It is extremely difficult to do.
Yep.
And it's like, when people are like, oh, we should do this. I was like, no, that's not what I'm passionate about. I'm sticking to this. It's like, this will work in a form. If I don't make a crap load of money, it's not a big deal. I'm still doing it, and I'm doing it for me because I enjoy it. And I do have a small fan base, and they enjoy it. And it's like, and a lot of people don't comment now. People don't really comment that much anymore.
It's because
they watch.
YouTube requires you to YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube got obnoxious.
Google really, Plus.
Oh, they're taking that out.
They are?
Yes, that's no longer a requirement anymore. So it's just success is determination and keep going. And there's this really cool, like, image, and I forget who the artist was. It's like, it shows two people, like, underground mining for something. They're just mining, and it's like, you have one person gives up, and he is, like, that close to, like, a whole bunch of treasure, and then someone else keeps going. It's like, the thing is, you don't know when you're about to be successful or get noticed. You don't know. So it's like, if you ever feel like giving up, you don't know if tomorrow, another day's worth of effort, it's going to work out for you. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if it's something you're passionate about, you got to keep doing it. But you have to do it for you.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, other people. I know a lot of people are like, I'm going to do this because I want to be famous. It's like, don't do it for
that.
No. It's not going to work.
The metaphor of the claw. Like, have you ever heard that one before?
I have not.
Anyone here seen Toy Story?
Yes.
First Toy Story? You know how the claw... And it's like,
yes,
the claw machine, it descends from the heavens,
yes,
and it's like, I have been chosen. That's how it is.
Yes.
Like, when you're trying to market original work,
yes,
the claw...
Yeah. I'm so thankful for the friends that I've made and the networks that I've gone through that helped me push, and like, that's where I get a lot more exposure. And I don't mind exposure with friends because that's different, because it's like, all right, I know you have bigger
exposure
audience
with
pools.
Friends. That sounds like Saturday.
Yeah, it does. So that's my thing. It's like spite and determination. Don't tell me I can't do something. I'm gonna do it.
Mm-hmm. Spite, determination?
I'm all about spite.
Yeah.
Spite's
great. I actually did a workshop at one point at a local high school. My friend's mom, the one who thought the Jewish people were Amish, actually, had me come in with a bunch of other writers, and they were all traditionally published writers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a webcomic author, and I was going to get into self-publishing. And one of the writers, oh, you don't want to do that. You're not going to make any money, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I'm going to do it now just to spite you. And it hasn't worked yet.
Yeah.
But I say yet, so
fewer,
eventually. And as far as I've got, like, several questions here that I'm answering, because there was the thing about the
early work,
yeah.
Which I do have a story.
Do tell.
There was my first book, quote unquote, that I had ever written and finished. It took me about 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Started in like 8th grade, would write in spurts throughout the years. I finished it, I went back, I re-edited it, rewrote things, and just over the years I kept saying, okay, this is going to be it, oh, and I'm not happy with it. And eventually I realized what it was I was in a boat that had holes, and I kept plugging the holes, and more holes kept coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to say, you know what, I need to abandon ship.
Yeah.
And it was the hardest thing I ever had to do, and just leave that story aside. I have to put the story aside, and I got to focus on something else. I got a million other ideas, so I'll focus on something else. this past year, after I don't know how many years of letting it sit, I went back and I reread it. And it was pretty awful. It was pretty poorly written. I've learned so many things over the years. I had a complete Mary Sue character in there. It was pretty bad. But like you said, there was a lot of really good ideas that I had come up with. And I'm like, oh, I forgot I did this. And the more I'm reading it, the more I'm like, you know what? It's not really that. I mean, structurally and format and all that, it's pretty bad. But at its heart, at its core, I wrote something that I wanted to read.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I think that I don't want to interrupt, but yeah. I think that's really what you should do is you write this book that wasn't there for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really what I had lost sight of that over the years, and not that Bardsworth isn't something for me, but I'm doing it more for the fans.
Mm-hmm.
Without them, I don't even need to put it up on the web. So,
yeah.
But I had lost track of that, and I'm like, you know, this was my attempt at writing a Dragonlance novel or something, you know, that I just really enjoyed reading. And I read it from cover to cover, mm-hmm. quote unquote. And I said, you know what? I'm going to have to rewrite this. This is going to have to be an upcoming project after I get all my other projects out of the way and start from scratch and take what worked and make it work better.
Yeah, there are definitely things that should be revisited like that. Again, tools you have now.
Right.
I think that that's... And also with the... Be the change you wish to see.
Yeah.
Be the person... Write the stuff you want to read. Oh, my wife just arrived.
Good.
Great. All
right. So...
Speaking of the person you want to read. We have, 10 minutes left.
Yeah, do you have any questions before I interrogate someone? Better if it comes from you. All right, do you feel legitimate as a writer? Does this legitimize you?
Yes. Yes. Okay. There is a book. Someone else edited it. Someone else made the cover. There's you notice that there's the refrain of someone else, someone else, someone else. In this very room, I was in a philosophy class and learned my first Wittgenstein, and for the field of human vision cannot perceive itself. And if someone else had not made this cover, I could be living in an elaborate delusion. So now, yes, I feel legitimate. I feel 100% legitimate.
It's a good cover.
Thank you. It is an excellent cover. But it's not just the cover. It's the other people are talking about it. Other people are seeing it. Other people exist. And they see the thing that I made. I made a thing.
Yes.
Look, I made a hat. It's where a hat was that wasn't there before. No one in here likes Sondheim. Oh, crap. Okay.
So
I should, but I don't. It's like...
I support that entirely.
It's like... It's... One of my voice actor friends like posted a thing, and like they have this thing called imposter syndrome. Apparently that's a thing. I was like, that's a thing, and that is, wow, I'm really like that thing. What it basically is, it's like, you just consistent, it's basically consistent self-doubt, like, I didn't do this, I'm not good enough for this, I'm not, it's like, there could be a lot of justifications for why you're good at something, or people defending you, but you're like, no, I didn't do this, I'm not worth enough to be here, what are you talking about, you're crazy, this isn't me, you know, and I suffer from that, apparently.
Think most creatives
do
it. It's like I'm very happy with where I'm going and you know where I'm at and whatnot, but it's like no, I don't feel legitimate. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm very lucky to get opportunities here and there, and you know, going back to what you said, like you don't read reviews. It's like I've kind of stopped reading comments and reviews because it's like I like to get comments when they're like nice. And I'm not saying it's like don't praise me. I don't want praise. It's like I want like legitimate comments. Did you enjoy this? You did enjoy this. Awesome. Thank you. I didn't enjoy this, but here's why I didn't enjoy this. Oh, thank you. You give a crap. Right. I did something once and this one. It's like sometimes people post the most awkward comments that you're like, I don't know what this means. I don't know how to respond to this because it's like, what?
So, I once got a 4-page, 1-star review, and I'm like, this is perfect! You hated my book, and I know why. I'm like, I respect you.
You
read it. You thought about it.
Yeah.
God bless you.
Instead, I just feel like, this is horrible.
And I have Julio.
Right.
Well, yes!
Julio.
So it's like...
what would Julio do?
There you go.
Yes,
what would Julio you know, so yeah, it's like, I should, but I don't.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
I reached a point years ago where I became very legitimate in my eyes. I grew up very underconfident about everything I did with very low self-esteem, and at some point I convinced myself, no, I was good, and I am legitimate. I wrote this. I put this up on the web. I've got people that read it. I don't know if I'm as legitimate as I want to be.
Well, no one ever is.
Right. But I'm very confident in my work. I know I'm legitimate. I know that there's levels of legitimacy that I still want to reach, though. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I don't feel legitimate, but there have been little spurts of it. One was when No Such Convention asked me how much money. I was like, I have no idea what that means. And so I wrote to Sandy Picard, who from the Guild, because he was a guest here, and to Neil Gaiman. I went, and Neil Gaiman's like, ask for the least amount of money you can. Whereas Sandeep's like, they're Vassar, built them for every penny. And so I went middle ground. But Neil Gaiman responded to me on Tumblr. Like, he actually spoke to me. He's like, here's what you do. And I'm like, Neil Gaiman respects me enough to respond. And I've seen him a couple of times. He owns two of my books because I gave it to him. And he's like, oh, yes, I remember. You gave me the books. I'm like, I'm sure they're door
senpai
stops.
Senpai noticed me. Noticed me. Same senpai noticed me at an Amanda Palmer concert like 5 years ago. It was awesome.
It is so cool.
Yeah.
Another thing is my first book, my publisher's like, the Sci-Fi Channel wants to like contract properties through us for potential miniseries. Would you be interested? I'm like, yes, I would be interested in being the next Sharknado, whatever you need.
Yeah.
And my publisher's like, yeah, we see it as like Being Human, which I hadn't seen at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, the British one, I'm like, oh, the British one must be better. But I'm like, Sci-Fi Channel wants me, and then they did nothing. I think I get the rights back in a couple months to ship it around, but I'm like, I'm going to have a TV show. It's going to be terrible. I can't wait. Because even a bad
and
TV
that'd be
show,
awesome.
It's a TV
be like,
show.
Well, the book's better.
I have a question for everybody around here.
Okay.
If you could get something that you had written performed in live action, what kind of people would you want on the staff? Either in the actors or the directors or anything like that?
Well, Brian Fuller, I've actually said that. I'm like, you know, if he could just do it, I'm sure he would find hidden depths that I'm sure I wrote in there but forgot about. You know, whoever he has. For casting, there's this woman named Vagina Tova. She was the neighbor in Spider-Man 2. She's a model, and she has this like thin, blonde, geeky air. I'm like, you would be perfect. So that would be ideal. Hmm. And you rate porn, so.
Not only, but with this book, I have a goal, and that goal is for Trent Reznor to give me a cover blurb just like my one from Publishers Weekly, except it says, "What the fuck did I just read?" Attributed to Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails. And also,
that
I kind of no, I want him to do the score. Like, I wanted Atticus. I want a Reznor and Ross score on this thing. And for actors, for the leads, Jesse Williams and that guy who played the Doof Warrior in Mad Max. His name is Iota. He's awesome. Look him up. Like, he's fucking scary.
That's very hard. It's like, I would want a parody of my work.
Yeah.
I would want Hans Zimmer scoring it, but I would want Mel Brooks writing it.
Wow.
Yes! You know, he does his own music, Mel Brooks.
That's even better.
Yeah. We're Jews out in space.
I would want that for the exposition parts, and then I would want, like, the most ridiculously stupid action scenes that we see like on Sharknado to like seriously epic Hans Zimmer music for the contrast, just because like I would want it made fun of. I don't care.
Yeah.
I can't think of actors for it, but it's like just that's just what I would want of it.
This one's for you. When you said parodying of your own work, I immediately thought of cardboard robot mech suits.
Oh, like the 4chan Gundam guy. Sorry.
I think I don't want to like, but your parts were like, would you want it to be animated? Would you want it to be like?
I actually toyed with the idea of trying to find someone to help me get it animated in my spare time,
which you clearly have.
With my son and my new one on the way now.
Congratulations!
Congrats.
August is going to be a fun month. I don't know who I would get for most of the voices, but I do know who I would want for. If you've not read my comic, Francis is a very big hulking demon who is very effeminate and likes to bake and likes to cook. And I always wanted to get Rob Paulsen to do his voice. And because Rob Paulsen is just, I was such a huge nerd when I was a kid that you know, I would study the names of the people that did the voices and the cartoons that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob Paulsen always came up. So I would talk about that, and people would be like, who? What? Huh? And this was back before the internet was a thing, so you couldn't look stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's on Twitter and on Tumblr, and he's got podcasts, and everyone knows who he is. But that would be my big dream, to have him do just that one voice. Everyone else, I don't care about. Find somebody for me. But
that's actually a similar thing. It's I'm assuming a lot of people have watched Dragon Ball Z if you're into anime. Okay. A while back, it's like I actually reached out to Kyle Hebert, who's Gohan's voice actor and stuff, and like the narrator and all that stuff and whatnot. And he actually recorded like a cameo spot for the anime movie I was going to end up doing, which I didn't do because it was like, I want to do this Kickstarter, but that won't work because I don't have to, let's do the web series and whatnot. And I actually got to meet him at a con, and we've become friends, and it's like, I do have a role for him, and he's going to do it, and it's awesome, and he's such a cool person, but it's hard to come from a fan standpoint of view and be like,
oh, yeah,
I'm kind of friends with you now. That is super awkward, but awesome.
No, it's I know like, that, because I'm friends with the Nostalgia Critic and Company, I feel so awful asking them to promote my shit.
With Kyle, it's like I meekly emailed. I was like, "Hey, would you want to?" I was like, "I know we kind of know each other now, and we've hung out at the convention, but I don't want to be like, hey, I know you're busy and promote me and like express like." But super super cool guy, and bless the hell out of that guy, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a really cool thing that where if you keep networking and meeting other people, it's like you end up, especially when you become an adult, it's like you have chances to befriend people you looked up to.
Yeah. When your idols become your rivals.
Yes.
That thing. Senpai totally noticed
Senpai.
And so did Sensei. I think we're actually technically out of time.
We're out of time.
One question.
Oh, yeah.
Are you guys all at the night panel?
I'm at the night panel with my wife. You guys should come because that would be awesome. And I promise it's not just about fanfic. It's very much about how to write characters interacting with one another. This one's going to be in CC to such and such, blah, blah, blah.
Is it here at this convention?
It's at this convention, yeah. 10 o'clock tonight, fanfiction after hours. It's in the schedule.
Wonderful.
So please come to that. This discussion will continue, except now with more porn.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just one quick question for commenting on stuff, like, or not review, but like, I guess people saying, like, they like your stuff, things like that. Do you need, like, constructive criticisms, or are things like saying, like, hey, this is really great, I liked it a lot, does that feel okay to you?
I would say as long as it is sincere either way, like, just let me know what you actually thought. I don't care if you don't like it. I'd like to know why you didn't.
Yeah. I think if it's a thing that I could fix, if it's a thing that I could conceivably edit or use for future reference, then please go ahead and offer constructive criticism in whatever format you feel like offering it. Positive praise is welcome from all channels and in all formats. I don't care how sincere you are about it or not. I'll get paranoid if you're not sincere, but that's beside the point. But if you're just going to say, I don't like this, go kill yourself.
Oh, I've had those.
Positive, please. Tweet me. Show up on my Facebook. I liked this. Hearts.
It's not like a... Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, not a, I guess, I don't know, informative enough?
It's plenty informative.
Like, I could just say, hey, this was cool.
Yeah, no.
Yes.
Some of the best reviews I have gotten have been, what the fuck did I just read? Like, that's, I'm okay with that. It sums up your thoughts inappropriately. Yeah, and on a fanfic front, like, I've, people just comments of ROTFLOL, like, back in the day.
Yeah.
That tells me everything I need to know about it. Thank you. I'm glad that I induced that particular ululation in your diaphragm. Thank you.
Yeah, it's like, I enjoy it when it happens. The thing that I'm enjoying more, though, right now, especially since I post like episodic things, and I enjoy it when people who watch it get involved and they start making theories about what's happening to the characters, or they go, wow, I hate this bitch. I was like, yes! That's what you should be feeling! Thank you!
I love when people live blog my shit.
Yes!
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, so screen cap of my book with, oh my god, it's my birthday in this book.
It's like, I have
I'm getting ready to do the season finale, which is like basically the first arc of the book, which I hated in the book. Actually, going back to the whole concept of, oh, you look at your older work, it's like I hated how I handled the first part of the book because I didn't care about it. It was one of those things where it's like, all right, I'm putting something here to show contrast for the protagonist. I don't really give a shit about it. Let's just get it out of the way. But in doing the animation, I was able to flesh it out and I enjoy it more. But it's like I got some recent comments, you know, people predicting certain things that are going to happen, to which I'm not going to say if they are. But just watching them say these things makes me really happy. Because it's like you are remembering and seeing development, and you're also telling me that there is character development and it's kind of working. It's like, thank you for that.
Yeah.
So
I get that a lot too. With the webcomic.
Yes.
Yeah. I just posted one recently and someone was like, oh, I bet this is going to happen. And, oh, I bet this is going to happen. They're not right, but. But it's fun to read it like, oh, maybe I should have taken it that way.
You ever see a prediction and go, oh, I wish I had thought of that?
Yes. Constantly. People were. Because I write my scripts months in advance. And so somebody would be like, oh, I bet this is going to happen. I sit there and go,
shit.
God damn it. I can't change it now. But
yeah.
Okay. Well, guys, thank you for coming.
Thank
you for coming.
Join us again at 10 o'clock. I don't have a business card.